This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about health disparities among people with disabilities. Our first two segments today are live, so if you have questions or comments for our guests, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. We would especially love to hear your thoughts if you have a disability or if you take care of someone who does. Is it easy to find proper care? What options do you have to fight discrimination? Again, we're on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. 866-476-3881, and we'll do our best to get your thoughts into the conversation today. Joining me now are two guests. Kristen Hughes-Sruer is Senior Director of Global Health Programs for the Special Olympics. Welcome, Kristen.
Thank you. So excited to be here today.
Karen Vaughn lives in Indianapolis. She's a longtime advocate for people with disabilities. Welcome to you, Karen.
Hello. I'm really excited about having this conversation today.
Kristen, we'll start with you. Most people are familiar with the events put on by the Special Olympics. Can you talk about the global health programs you're in charge of and maybe give us a sense of the range of the programs you work on?
Sure, absolutely. So Special Olympics is, of course, known for our sport competition for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. We also have a health arm to the work that we're doing, where we are working towards access to quality healthcare and prevention services for people with intellectual disabilities. So we do this alongside of our sport programming. We offer health screenings and education at a lot of our events and competitions. We're working to train healthcare providers and students and health workers on how to work with people with intellectual disabilities. We have a robust fitness and prevention program where we're really trying to engage this population outside of their sports practices to lead really healthy lives.
Are there enough people, I guess, who know, how to interact properly with people with developmental disabilities like you're talking about?
Unfortunately, there's not. This is a huge disparity, and this is a lot of times they don't know how to speak with a person with intellectual disabilities. There is significant stigma and discrimination that goes alongside of that. And so when somebody goes through medical school or a health professional school, maybe if they're lucky, they will have some sort of lecture related to it, but that's pretty rare. And maybe they would have interacted with somebody with an intellectual disability, but again, that's quite rare.
You talked about communication. What do most people miss or get wrong in how to interact with a person with an intellectual or developmental disability?
That's a great question. So whenever we talk with the population that we serve, people with intellectual disabilities, they want to be treated with respect. They want the healthcare provider to talk to them. They are the patients. To treat them the same as they would treat anybody else. Sometimes a person with intellectual disability has to see a healthcare provider with a support person or a caregiver, and that's part of their process. But they want to be treated with respect, and they want the doctor or healthcare provider to be speaking to them, and also to really explain things in their proper language, in a simple way. I mean, a lot of times you go to the doctor's office and you don't even really understand what they're saying to you unless you've been trained as a medical professional. So just being able to understand what to do. I think we also see a couple other challenges that occur. There's basically a diagnostic overshadowing that will often happen where somebody goes in for some sort of illness or chronic condition, and then they're treated for their intellectual disability, and they're not actually getting to the root cause of what is causing their ailment. And that is, I mean, that further exacerbates these poor health outcomes because it's not really getting to what is truly happening.
They're looking at, I guess, what they perceive to be the most obvious problem, and then the other actual problem that they came in for seems secondary?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, an example is there's a teenager that I know who was nonverbal and starts having like really violent episodes. And so the doctor placed that person on antipsychotics rather than looking right in his mouth to discover that he had multiple abscesses. So not getting down into that root cause of what is the problem. Another person that I know goes to the eye doctor every year. She's legally blind. However, she's never been given a pair of glasses because she wasn't able to read the letters on the eye exam, and her optometrist didn't know how to adapt the exam. So there's just sometimes more layers that you have to dig into to really properly diagnose and get to the root cause of where the ailments are.
There are other groups around the country and around the world that work on issues for people with disabilities. How do you decide what to focus on at the Special Olympics?
Yeah, good question. So we do a lot of prevention education. We've built up a screening program that does medical screenings, overall medical screenings. We do dentistry and optometry, which, as you can imagine, are often harder services to access, particularly if you're on Medicaid. We do podiatry because we are a sports organization, so obviously feet are very important for a lot of people in their sports. So we have sort of built this up over the years, and ultimately we're trying to also integrate into what is happening within the community and within what other organizations are doing or what the local health departments are doing so that intellectual disability is integrated into all of this.
We're talking today about health disparities among people with disabilities. We've been speaking with Kristen Hughes-Schreuer, Senior Director of Global Health Programs for the Special Olympics. And we want to welcome Karen Vaughn into the conversation. She lives in Indianapolis, and she's a longtime advocate for people with disabilities. So, Karen, how did you get started as an advocate for people with disabilities?
Well, unfortunately, you usually come into this field or arena by necessity. In my situation, it was back in 1976. I had an injury that caused paralysis from the neck down. And I was only 18 at the time and knew nothing about what kind of services were available. And again, back in 1976, there weren't any organizations or networks to contact someone. Like now, there's good connections in the hospital after someone has an injury that can let you know what's available here in Mary County. And I didn't know that I needed any kind of assistance until my primary caregiver, my mother, and I was home for a year, and she passed away. And I was thrust into the residential care facilities. And being 18, I was kind of someone who didn't take well to being told that I couldn't get up or I couldn't go out. So just fighting with the system, and was forced to leave several of those institutions and trying to find my way through bureaucracy, and 40 some years later, I'm a lot wiser than most individuals with disabilities.
And so in that time, these 40 some years since 1976, I mean, you've seen an awful lot of changes in surrounding a lot of things having to do with people with disabilities. I mean, would you say that things are a great deal better now, or do we still have an awful lot we need to work on?
Things are better now, but Indiana is not the most progressive state here in this country, and we have a long way to go. The laws being passed, the Americans with Disabilities Act, has afforded a lot of opportunity for our community. But like you said, we still have a long way to go.
What was the experience like advocating for change at the Indiana State House? Did it feel like your message was heard when you delivered it?
Well, I became involved with the governor's planning council for people with disabilities and was fortunate to have education on communicating and working with or dealing with our government representatives. So getting their attention when you go to the county or go to the state house and you have 1,000 friends with you, we tend to get their attention for sure. And letting them know that we do vote. And they owe us the courtesy of listening to us at least. It was fun. You know, when you have over 1,000 people gathered in the main part of the state house, that's always exciting. Yeah. But when you go in to meet your legislator one-on-one, that's not so easy. Mm. Sometimes we've tried to focus on meeting the important people, not to say that they're not all important, but the movers and shakers. We've had experience in trying to focus in and speaking with this particular person, and they would definitely try to avoid us, knowing that we can't go up and down steps easily. They would avoid areas where they knew we could get to.
Karen, we'll pick this up after the break. We're talking about health disparities among people with disabilities. If you have questions or comments for the show, we are live for the next couple segments. Let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today, we're talking about health disparities among people with disabilities. We would love your questions and comments on the topic. We're on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from, at 866-476-3881. We have Kristen Hughes-Schreuer with us, Senior Director of Global Health Programs for the Special Olympics, and Karen Vaughn is also with us. She lives in Indianapolis, and she's a longtime advocate for people with disabilities. And just before the break, Karen, I'm sorry I cut you off. We had to go to break, but we were talking about advocating for change at the Indiana State House. Would you say that it sounds to me like just getting their attention was an obstacle. Would you say that was the biggest obstacle to getting things changed on the state level, or was there something else that was more difficult?
Getting their attention is one thing, but getting them to change the rules and regulations is entirely different. We can do things on a local level, but when it comes to making changes in programs, such as what Medicaid provides or what they don't provide, that's something entirely different. Indiana is, according to major advocacy organizations, Indiana is 51st worst providing state in the country. just as, you know, home care and being able to stay out in the community. It's doesn't say anything good about what's happening in the state. In my personal experience, the last 4 years, three out of those 4 years, I was forced to be in facilities because there is such an incredible shortage of nursing or nurses, and I require skilled care all the time. And I had to file suit against Medicaid for discriminatory policies. And in the meantime, going through that process, that's what took the 3 years. We went through hearings and testimonies, and finally, there was a decision by a federal court, a federal judge, that yes, Marion County Indiana Medicaid was not only discriminated and violating my rights by not letting me participate in programs that were available to other people with disabilities, because of my skill needs. And I've been home for the last year, and unfortunately, the fight's not over. Mm-hmm. State Medicaid has decided to file an appeal against the decision, and it's in the hands of the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals in Chicago now. So we were hoping to set a precedent for everybody in not only Indiana, but several other states don't have programs like we could have. So it's kind of up in the air right now, but there are opportunities now that folks didn't have in 2016.
Kristen, so go ahead, Karen.
I would encourage anyone that's having a problem getting good home care, I would encourage them to, you can either call the Governor's Planning Council or folks with developmental disabilities and get information on how they can, without a lawsuit, how they can join in on the current fight we have. And I would encourage folks to know that it's not just a dead end, literally.
Karen, we have a listener comment from Esther on Facebook who says, I am disabled in Hope, Indiana, and have trouble getting help. I'm in a wheelchair and just need to help. I just need help to get to the doctor's office. The staff used to bring their wheelchair to me, to the car, and I could transfer myself, but they decided to stop doing that. So I haven't been able to go to the doctor here in Hope, Indiana. I have trouble getting help for lots of things. I'm independent in many ways, but I do need help. Esther's situation is different from yours, but how much does that resonate with you, Karen?
Oh, it's all too familiar. Caregivers, home health agencies can stop providing services like that. For the simple fact that they don't have enough caregivers that are willing to do that kind of thing, transport folks with disabilities. So there are options like visiting physicians that will come to your home. And I'm not sure what's available in her county or in Hope. It's ironic, the name is Hope. But there are things available. You can call the local independent living center. I'm not sure what independent living center that area has, but they can also call the ICOIL, Indiana Council on Independent Living. And again, you can call the council for folks with disabilities and get that contact information. So hopefully they can find out what's best and what would hope provide.
Kristen Hugh Schreuer, you work with state governments on how to enforce policies around this. What kinds of policies are common? And is it difficult to make sure they're actually enforced?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's probably one of the bigger challenges is making sure that they are enforced. And I think that what Esther and Karen have been talking about really gets to the heart of the systems are complex. Right. So if you need specialty care, sometimes it's hard to navigate to get there. If you need transport to get to those appointments, and that's kind of leading into this cascade of health disparities that we're talking about. So it can cause early onset of chronic diseases. You're getting poor quality of health services. There are barriers to preventative care. And then, you know, ultimately that can drive, all these things can drive the cost of healthcare up. That delayed access, misdiagnosis, having to go to the emergency room for something that could have been prevented. And that, I mean, that's really what we're trying to help navigate and advocate for this population so that the systems can better serve people with disabilities.
We're talking today about health disparities among people with disabilities, and we're talking with Kristen Hugh Schreuer, Senior Director of Global Health Programs for the Special Olympics. Karen Vaughn is also with us. She lives in Indianapolis, and she's a longtime advocate for people with disabilities. Kristen, are health disparity issues for people with disabilities getting more or less attention from lawmakers in recent years? Is there a trend there?
I think it depends on where. So in some places, yes, it certainly is getting more attention. Special Olympics, our health program, is funded in the U.S. by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And so we do a lot of work with the federal agency and then work down with the local health state department. And so some places are more progressive than others, as Karen was pointing out earlier.
What impact, Kristen, has the pandemic had on the population of people with disabilities, intellectual or physical or otherwise?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just really exacerbated the disparities that we know exist. It's definitely disproportionately affected people with disabilities, which is putting them at risk of increased morbidity and mortality. I think of places where we're seeing is that there is definitely inequities in accessing public health messaging for people with intellectual disabilities. Isolation, we know that isolation is a huge issue without the pandemic, and it just increased significantly. There's disruption of services, so lots of social services, things are not the same. The activities and access to those services are not as readily available or not available. And we know that there are chronic health conditions and comorbidities that put a lot of people at risk for increased risk around coronavirus. Then we've also seen a stigmatization of prioritization of patients. So if you have a certain number of ventilators, how are you making determinations of who has access to those? And so it has really affected this population. You know, also going back to the caregiving, a lot of individuals with intellectual disabilities may live in group homes or with roommates and staff, and so that adds increased risk. But also, you know, the nursing home settings have been getting a lot of attention, but there hasn't been as much attention on these group homes, which have arguably similar exposure challenges.
Karen, we were talking earlier, you were put in a nursing home a number of years ago against your will. You're out now, but you say the fight continues. What is your situation like now since you left the nursing home?
Well, because of the judgment of the courts, I was extremely fortunate in having one of the persons that was not afraid to testify, a lot of home health agencies denied, they didn't feel comfortable in helping going to court because they didn't want to have any retribution from Medicaid. I'm talking about home health agency owners. The one that I had been familiar with before and had access to services through tender care services here in Marion County. She was asked by the courts, what would it take to be able to provide services for me? And since they haven't had a rate increase for home care workers, nurses, or home health agents, home health aides, 10 years is a long time to not get adequate funding for that. So the judge asked, you know, the caregiver company, what would it take? And she said it would take $65 an hour to be able to hire sufficient educated staff. And that's what I've been afforded, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So I'm extremely fortunate that I have my own home. I live on Mass Avenue downtown. And I have a very active social life, or I did until the lockdowns. But Mass Avenue is a very exciting place to live. And like I said, I have 24-hour care, and they can take me to my appointment and just provide everything that I could possibly want.
You talked about how Indiana is at kind of the bottom of the heap on some measures when it comes to people with disabilities. What about Indianapolis? You're talking about your city, our city. How has this city been for you?
Well, fortunately, I can drive my wheelchair to the state house if necessary. And this lawsuit has gotten a lot of attention. In fact, with the appeal, I have two national organizations providing legal services. Mm. But I'm doing quite well for someone with a significant disability. Better off than anybody else in the state, in fact. So it's unfair to compare my situation to others, because that may not be the same when the courts decide whether or not to grant the state their request to deny my services again. But right now, I'm doing really well.
Mm. Kristen, I want to make sure. I want to make sure we get you into the conversation before the segment's up. If you're at a hearing with state lawmakers and they seem hesitant to pass a bill and maybe spend more money on a program to help alleviate these health disparities that we're talking about for people with disabilities, I guess what's the best argument you can make?
So, I mean, I think there's probably a few levels to it. So one would be funding system. So how can we make sure that providers are adequately reimbursed for their time with patients with disabilities who may require more time, need more support? I would also want to ensure that there's help with family caregiving, care coordination, health services to really help those outcomes so that people who need that access can get the service to get the transport. Those would probably be two areas that I would strongly focus on. And I think if you're making the argument, it's ultimately we can bring down the cost of the healthcare if we can provide the proper support so that somebody can access healthcare services in a preventative way before it gets to a point where it's actually going to cost the system a lot more money.
I want to thank both of our guests. I'm afraid we're out of time today. Kristen Hughes Schreuer is Senior Director of Global Health Programs for the Special Olympics. Thank you so much, Kristen, for your time today.
Thank you.
Karen Vaughn lives in Indianapolis. She's a longtime advocate for people with disabilities. Thanks to you, Karen, and best of luck.
Thank you.
After a quick break, you'll hear a recent conversation I had with an IU professor and the president of a service provider for people with disabilities. We'll talk about the research behind these health disparities and find more about what can be done about it. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Back now to our discussion on health disparities for people with disabilities. And just a heads up for our live listeners, this next segment was pre-taped, so we can't take your questions and comments like usual. We're joined by two guests. Dr. Mary Ciccarelli is professor of clinical medicine and clinical pediatrics at Indiana University School of Medicine. Mary, welcome.
Thank you so much.
And Kelly Hartman is president and CEO of Insights Consulting. Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you.
Mary, let's start with you. Can you talk about what research has been done on the disparities that exist for people with disabilities?
What we know about healthcare for persons with disabilities is data that gets collected in various interview surveys at a national level, and it shows an increased frequency of a number of both comorbidities and increased mortalities in this population. When that data is collected, it looks at the whole population of people with disabilities across cognitive disabilities, sensory, motor, mental health disabilities. And so it's a broad look at a group. And it shows that they have more obesity and cigarette smoking and mental health and illness and cardiovascular disease and cancer disease and respiratory disease as compared to the adults without disabilities.
Can we point to why that is?
There's many fold reasons. The ADA now 30 years ago improved access in terms of clinic facilities being able to be accessible to people in wheelchairs and sign language interpreters used in clinical settings and special equipment bought for mammography and things like that. And it did move us forward. We still have significant issues with access to care that is not just related to whether the curb lets the wheelchair in. We have issues related to the education of persons with disabilities, the support teams and families that care for them, and the health professionals who serve them. And so there's really a lot of areas for improvement yet to get those disparities closed.
Would you say that the data that we have on these health disparities for people with disabilities, would you say that that data is good?
I believe the data, yes. I believe that it's good. It corresponds with what we see in other nations that have more robust population health management with this population. The UK, Australia, Canada all do better jobs of paying attention and addressing special services for people with disabilities. But it correlates. So I think across the globe, we see this.
Are there significant areas, though, where we're missing crucial data on this?
Our data is not as good as it should be, because I believe that the disparities for persons with sensory disabilities are different enough from the disparities for people with motor disabilities or cognitive disabilities that we have to do some subtyping and analyses, and we don't have enough data on that. We also don't have good data on changes we've made and their impacts. So yes, I think more research needs to be specifically done in this area.
Kelly Hartman, can you tell us what Insights is and what you do there?
Sure. Insights Consulting primarily is a community-based services provider for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities We work all across central Indiana, actually providing home-based services in 52 counties across the state. So in that, what we do is provide staff in people's homes, whether that be behavioral services, music therapy, or staff to help them access what they need to live their best life. And we do that in a number of different arrangements based on the individual's needs. We are primarily funded by what's called the Medicaid Waiver Program, which is a federal partnership with each state to spend Medicaid dollars to provide services to people in their homes so that they can be integrated in their community.
Is there a specific area where you see the most significant disparities for people with disabilities? What do you need to focus on most, I guess?
I think, like Mary said, you know, we have some glaring statistics, especially with my folks having much worse challenges with obesity and diabetes, for example. So my folks need some real specialized care. At the same time, regulatory and bureaucratic challenges that get in the way, especially funding. Sometimes my folks need twice the amount of services for one third the amount of reimbursement. So oftentimes it's very, very difficult for a doctor to ethically make a great commitment to folks who need more services. I mean, we're really lucky in Indiana to have people like Dr. Mary Ciccarelli on board. There's not a lot of physicians who are willing to be that aggressive for the minuscule reimbursement they receive as a result of Medicaid.
Dr. Ciccarelli, how much did the Americans with Disabilities Act help address some of these health disparities?
I think that it moved us forward. It's hard for me to quantitate for you a percentage move. It moved us forward. We didn't routinely feel obligated to get a translator for someone who is a hearing impairment 35 years ago. And now that's automatic. We didn't have equipment that adapted to people in wheelchairs. Now that is automatic. So I think we moved a certain chunk forward, but I don't think, I think we can't just rest on our laurels by any means. And if I could add to what Kelly said, and I think she'll agree with me, mental health and dental are other particularly glaring areas of deficit for people with disabilities. And so we were talking generally about healthcare, but I think that there are primary care problems and specialty care problems, but I want to call out specifically dental and mental health as well as particularly difficult in terms of finding services. I think you agree. Yeah, Kelly.
Yeah, Kelly, any addendum to that on the impact, I guess, of the ADA?
You know, the ADA provided great hope and certainly has empowered people to have greater access to things that they need. I think there's a long, long way to go. In the state of Indiana specifically, we have really, really tough access, like Mary alluded to, of getting help with mental health, crisis, behavioral services, and really good access to psychiatric treatment.
How much, Dr. Ciccarelli, how much of an impact does the ADA have now for people facing inequality?
Well, we have organizations like our Protection and Advocacy Service, which is Indiana Disability Rights, who helps us when there are concerns with issues related to health access. And they've done a lot of good work in the last few years on decision-making supports and giving better voice to people in healthcare and not automatically getting guardianship for a person who has a diminished ability to speak for themselves, but actually giving them the supports they need to continue to speak for themselves. And so I'd highlight that as something that was very important to improve in our state, and they did good work with. And so they take on, as an organization, they are helpful in taking on challenges. The State Department of Health and the Governor's Planning Council for Persons with Disabilities has a task force on health and disability, and they're working on identifying public health educational programs that are better adapted to people with special needs. So there are activities happening. And so it's not we're not stalled. We just need to continue moving forward.
We're talking with Dr. Mary Ciccarelli, professor of clinical medicine and clinical pediatrics at Indiana University School of Medicine. We also have Kelly Hartman with us. She's president and CEO of Insights Consulting. So, Kelly Hartman, do you think enough people with disabilities know what options they have to fight against discrimination or other issues that come up?
Oh, no. And I think part of that is why we need the ADA to begin with, right? And why we need advocacy is because people with disabilities are still seen through a social lens of deficit. And so people immediately treat them, interact with them, include them in a way that they are lacking something. When if we would look at them as humans who had unique challenges and started to focus on what they could do and what their capabilities are, we would find ways to include them, help them advocate for themselves, and have better access to services. So as much as you can have the ADA in place and have great advocacy, there has to be a point where the whole world better understands folks have great capabilities. We all have challenges. It's a humanity issue, not a disability issue.
But given the way things are, what have you found is the best way to educate people about their options, I guess?
I think the best way for all of us to better understand each other is to include all people in all things, which is the intent of the ADA, right? And sometimes even with the greatest of intentions, you don't know what you don't know. And so it's really fair that some people who may not have a loved one with a disability or have ever really interacted with folks who might have an intellectual challenge, they may not completely understand. They may have fears. They may have misunderstandings, and that's okay. I think embracing that for folks who are not disabled is as important a part of the big issue as helping people with disabilities access things better.
Dr. Ciccarelli, I have to imagine that it has, but has the pandemic created entirely new challenges for people with disabilities, things that largely were not an issue before?
Yes. I think the biggest change for those of us who do primarily outpatient care is that we went to almost totally to a telehealth platform when COVID launched. And the interface, we know that people with disabilities are less likely to have internet access as well. And so if you can't even access your doctor now because you can't go to the office and you don't have internet, that impairs your ability to access care. Alternatively, patients who have been inpatient, we're not allowing visitors. And if a person needs someone else to be their spokesperson, needs someone else to support them because of their fears when they're in the hospital, the having to be isolated at a scary time in one's life in an inpatient setting because of COVID restrictions has added another barrier for this population. So the third barrier of COVID, I would say, is people who have long-standing need for various therapies that have been interrupted, and now they're entering their sixth month of not getting therapies in their usual way, and they're losing ground. So physical therapy, occupational therapy, behavioral therapy.
Sure. What about issues that were there before, but things that the pandemic has highlighted or made worse? That's a little trickier, I guess.
It is trickier. I think that generalized access barriers were there before. They're more complicated. I think that certain things are resuming now as best we can. So I don't really have a good answer, I guess, that there's something that in particular got worse besides what I've said.
Kelly Hartman, go ahead.
Something to keep in mind is many of our folks, especially the folks with intellectual and developmental disabilities, already pre-COVID really, really struggled with social isolation. And so imagine putting a magnifying glass on that for many of those folks. That has been significantly challenging. The other thing that's really different, especially like at Insights where we provide in-home supports, our folks have to continue, my staff have to continue to show up to work. It's considered a congregate setting from the CDC point of view. Those folks have people in and out of their house all day providing hands-on support. There's data that shows in some cases up to five times the probability that somebody in our industry would get COVID because of the pre-existing health conditions and the fact that people are in and out of their homes, We have some compliance issues with using PPE. And I can't control what staff do when they're not working with my folks. So whatever they're doing out there, they constantly are bringing that in and out of people's homes. So those are a couple of issues that we really have struggled with. In an underfunded program already, it's really, really tough for companies to continue to do what they need to do to keep people healthy and safe.
Kelly, are you hopeful that this situation, as awful as it is, could prompt some positive long-term changes for people with disabilities? Because it's made issues that they're facing a little bit more pronounced to everybody?
I think the biggest concern I have long-term is the economic sustainability of services for people. The really promising things is that we've had many folks who have, they have done better with telehealth than they ever did with face-to-face services. We have had some great meetings and collaboration and realized that we don't have to be all in the same room. And so in some ways, I find great hope in what we've learned from this pandemic will improve services for people with disabilities, and we'll find more creative, efficient, and cost-effective ways to get some services to people. Obviously, the flip side of that is we have to be careful that we're not like, oh, well, we made it through this, so let's do telehealth forever, because that's really not appropriate for everybody all the time.
Dr. Ciccarelli, are there certain ways Indiana is different from other states when you look at health disparities for people with disabilities?
The way states render Medicaid waiver services, home and community-based waiver services, does vary state by state. Mm. There are some other states who have done innovations in creating health systems that better address the comprehensive needs of populations like that, like people with IDD in particular. I don't see us as having some advantages that I see in some other states. A better managed care of these patients so they don't fall between the cracks. We're very much a non-managed care state, still very fee-for-service driven in terms of healthcare. And so those would be the differences that I think put Indiana at some disadvantage comparatively in terms of our services for people with disabilities.
We heard earlier in the show about a woman's story fighting to be released from a nursing home that she didn't want to be in. She had to file a lawsuit and win to make that happen. How do these kinds of lawsuits usually go? Is it difficult for people?
Well, finding lawyers to take on this advocacy role is, if you're a person who lives in poverty, is not as easy as if you have an issue where you aren't a person who lives in poverty. And so I think that there are advocacy organizations that do help. As I mentioned, Indiana Disability Rights in particular, but other agencies for poverty law are very helpful. And so I think these cases can, if the person is activated to be strong, it's unusual for someone to be activated enough to do this for themselves when they've lived a life where they haven't been in charge of themselves. So I think one of the reasons we hear few of these stories is because of the lack of empowerment of the individuals, not so much that once you get to a courtroom, it isn't found in your favor. It's actually getting to the courtroom, I think, for this population that's hard.
Kelly Hartman, in our last 30 seconds, are there enough groups in Indiana to help people with disabilities, would you say?
I think that there's enough. I think we need to be more creative in how we reach people. And we somehow have to find a way to get resources to people. We're talking about people in services today, but we have to understand that that's only about 30% of the total group of people who are actually eligible for services. So we have to learn from the whole to figure out what we can do for the people who still aren't getting what they need.
Kelly Hartman is president and CEO of Insights Consulting. Thank you so much for your time, Kelly.
Thank you.
Dr. Mary Ciccarelli is professor of clinical medicine and clinical pediatrics at Indiana University School of Medicine. Dr. Ciccarelli, thanks for your time.
Thanks a lot.
Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Maggie Galon. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Adam Gross is our technical director. Our podcast can be found wherever you get podcasts. I'm Matt Pelser. Thanks for listening. This is All In.